Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Ten Talk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, and it is glorious. And I am so thrilled I have in the studio with me Davon Miller, the author of the Mr. Tickety Tock Clock series, and actually he's just a brilliant guy who, as a little kid, he's sitting there looking at the clock, you know, in his, how many of us just sat in our classroom and stared at that clock just counting down the minutes? How many of us ever thought to make it into our character of a very, very beautiful and lovely series? Hi, Davon.
Hi, Patsy. I'm back, everybody. It's so great to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, I think of that so often. Often when I'm talking to authors, they'll talk about their school days and the time they were, you know, started writing, but none of them ever said, you know, thought, look at that clock. It could be a character. It could come off the wall, and it could jump into my storyline. Mm-hmm. You're so clever.
Thank you.
So what's happening with you, in addition to the fact that, of course, all my listeners know that you now do these wonderful book buzzes for us?
Yes.
And it is such a thrill. I get so many nice comments from people saying that they just love to, well, they love to hear your voice, and they love that you're doing these book buzzes.
Oh, my
but
goodness.
What's happening with Mr. Tickety Tock Clock?
Mr. Tickety Tock Clock, well, you know, he's always loving to read, so that's what he does in his free time right now. You know, and of course, right now I'm still writing. I have a few more adventures I'd love to write for Mr. Tickety Tock Clock, but as always, he just loves to read, and that's what he does in his free time, actually.
And what about your free time? Do you have much free time right now?
My free time is not much free. I'm actually so busy with school, and I know tomorrow I have final exams and stuff, so yeah, school has been taking up most of my time, but whenever I can, just try and write as much and as often as I can.
Are you back in school, real school, like a building? You go to a building anymore? I don't know if anyone goes to buildings anymore.
Well, not yet.
Not yet.
I will go to an actual building in the fall, but it's actually just been so nice to have the leisure to go to school anytime and anytime you want, honestly. So it's all online for now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's not quite the same. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great that you can do it, but it is nice to be able to be in a real building.
Of course, yeah.
And of course, have a clock there. I mean, it's every time I think of it, I get such a kick out of it. Years and years, millions of students sat around looking at that clock, and nobody was as clever as you.
No, thank you.
So, tell me how becoming the book buzz, you know, representative for Joy on Paper, for kids' books, what has it done for you? How have you discovered all of these wonderful authors, and what does it make you feel like?
It really makes me feel joyful, honestly. Just discovering so many new books, honestly, really does put a smile on my face. And what I do specifically for these book buzzes is because I started out as an indie author. I'm still an indie author, so not a huge publisher. And I'm just going down the list discovering what books are not on the shelves at stores. What books can people discover that's not on the shelves? And that's what I try and do. And just the sheer amount of talent that's out there has been really, truly amazing. And, you know, these stories deserve so much more attention. And so that's what I try and do with my book buzzes. And just discovering these new books is like, wow, you know, I wish these books were more well-known and stuff like that. So and it's also given me a new, like, found appreciation for, like, certain types of writing and stuff like that. So it's just been incredible.
Well, you know, I enjoyed so much recently, of course, the book was Watercress, with written by Andrea Wang, and Jason Chin is the illustrator. And I was just so taken with that book. It's so beautifully done. And just having that opportunity for you to do the book buzzes for them that they can then use on their web pages, they can use those on their media, social media, they can put links to it. And then, of course, I put up the interviews so that anyone who wants to listen to that interview, and it was so much fun to talk to both of them. Mm-hmm. They are a hoot. I mean, they are just wonderful. And so that is up on my website, which is anybody can go there. It's radio-joyonpaper, and you can listen to this interview again. And again, the authors can use these on their web pages and on their social media to help promote their books, because what we have to do. We have to help, and as you said, to help market these books of course, that they get out there. They have the opportunity to reach readers. And I think that, you know, this has been, for me, you know, I love talking to all global best-selling authors, and it's a thrill. You know, it's you every time. Like I talk to David Baldacci, but he's been on the program 8-9 times already.
Oh, wow.
You know, so many times, and I love talking to him and all the other ones that I, you know, are really so big. Mm-hmm. But to know that I'm helping people who are just starting off,
of course, yeah,
and giving them that opportunity is what really it gives me a thrill.
Mm. Yes.
So what are your plans? Are you going to, now you're going to write more Mr. Tickety Talk Clock books?
Yes.
I hope so. And I think it's, you know, just a great series. And do you have plans for other illustrated books? Are you going to continue with the illustrations? Are you working on, I don't know, do you take drawing programs in your, what are you studying exactly?
Actually, I'm studying theater. So kind of like what I'm doing now with like the book buzzes. So like, I would love to get into like voiceover and all that types of stuff. So right now I'm studying theater, acting and whatnot. And it's kind of like intertwined with like screenwriting as well. So that's what I do like as a hobby, actually, but yeah.
Yeah, well, screenwriting is lots of fun, I can tell you. As a matter of fact, that's what I'm going to be talking about in the next half hour. I'm with Philip Vega. He's coming on the program is he wrote a book that just the first time I read it, I said, oh my goodness, this should be a movie. Mm-hmm. And so he's coming, we're going to be talking about that. But it is fun, and you know, one of the things, as I think I mentioned to you, in Hollywood, it's you write these scripts and it's wonderful, and you never know. You know, if a script is picked up, a spec script is picked up, it's pretty great. You know, you feel really happy. And that happened to me 3 times.
Oh, wow.
3 of my spec scripts were picked up. I mean, and optioned. You know, that's nice because you get money. Mm-hmm. The problem is, and now if was a problem back then, it might not be quite as big a problem today because they're making, well, once they start shooting again, there's a lot of places for them to put product. Mm-hmm. Back then, it was a film. You had to have a film financed.
Okay.
And so all of my scripts went into turnaround, and which is, you know, terrible because they just, I mean, literally spun around from one office to another. They'd go to this producer, that producer, this producer.
Oh,
and
wow.
They'd get picked up and they'd get optioned. And it was nice. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you know, got optioned more than once. And each time you get money, but you really want to see the script done.
Of course.
You want to see it on screen. And then, unfortunately, another spec script that I did was for Debbie Reynolds. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in 2008, when the financial, and we were financed for that one. We had millions of dollars of financing all set up, and that was supposed to be filmed right here in Florida.
Okay.
And Debbie Reynolds was here in Florida. And then the financial collapse happened in 2008, and all the financing dried up like overnight, literally overnight. It just disappeared. But of course, she was a friend, and we stayed in contact. But after that, by the time we could get financing again, it was impossible to get insurance on her. She was then too old.
Oh, wow.
You know, you get to a point where you can't, you know, films have to be insured mightily, you know, and especially if you're the star, you know, so it became a problem. But it's fun to keep doing it. Are you learning a lot about keeping to less than 120 pages?
Oh, yes, of course. And just all the ins and outs on how to write. Like before then, I was just like randomly typing out scripts, not knowing the specifics and the blueprints on like actually how to write and stuff. So it's just a lot of fun to research.
And it is. And it's a lot of fun. And because I'm sure you're like me, you see the story in your head. You can visualize everything.
Yes.
And it's so much fun. And it is really, you know, writing a book is great. But writing a script, because it's so visual in your head, and, you know, it's 120 pages. Don't do 121 pages, anybody, if you ever do it. I swear, this is so funny. I mean, I have been in meetings where a producer will say, how many pages is it? Not what is the story is about. Not what, you know, is this a nice idea? Is this anything? They'll have a script, how many pages? And they say 123 pages. They don't look
goodness.
At it. I mean, we're talking serious.
Really?
Because they time things. Everything is timed in the film. And they don't want to run over anything. So it's really quite amazing what happens. But, you know, you have to keep trying. And so you have some good ideas for films?
I have this one idea.
What?
I can't say it. But I'm at a point, I'm like, I don't know how to end this movie. I have, like, the beginning. I'm like, oh, my goodness. It's like, but that's, like, the most exciting thing, honestly. It's like, you're at, like, a dead end. It's like, okay, maybe I'll try this, maybe I'll try that. And I remember I just watched this documentary of a screenwriter who wrote for Toy Story 3, and he had, like, the same problem. He's like, this ending, like, is killing me and stuff like that. So, of course, it's going to take, like, so long, but... Yeah.
Well, I discovered that one of the best ways to finish these things is to lay in a hammock. I don't know if you have a hammock. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't have hammocks. But my whole childhood was spent reading books in a hammock and under trees in northern Michigan. I tell you, that is so conducive to your mind just floating away. It's sort of like you're floating, your body's floating in that hammock, moving just a little bit in the breeze, and then your mind goes to, and you can finish it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to try this, you know?
Yeah.
you never know. You have to try what works.
Of course.
But it's wonderful that you're doing this and that, you know, as I feel, and it's funny, I will tell people that I just gave you a bag of books.
Yeah.
and I've invited Devon to come over to the house one day, and there are a lot more books. And one of the things is I'm now getting around a dozen books a week.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, I have a new mail lady, and my old mailman was wonderful. I would get, during the pandemic, of course, I had the books sent to the house instead of to the studio, and he was so wonderful, and he'd actually bring the books right to my door, you know, because they don't fit in the mailbox, you know. And now I have this woman, I'm just, she's a little bit, I don't know. She says, well, I can't do these books. I said, well, what do you mean? They're mailed to me. She said, well, there's too many of them. I said, well, you know, I've tried to tell the publishers, redirect them back to the studio. I'm going back to the studio.
Yeah.
But I'm getting like a dozen books.
Oh.
So, you know, and so many times I get two books. I usually get the first edition, the one before it's actually printed.
Okay.
And then I get the first edition. So I usually have duplicates of many books.
Right.
So like I can just, you know, I already have like 3,400. I had 3,400 books in the house when I started this program.
Oh, wow.
So you can imagine. Well, that's not a lot. I really had 6,312 books at one point.
Oh.
So you can see that you're going to come over to the house with two big bags, and Devon's going to go out carrying a hefty load. Anyway, Devon, I want to thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you.
And mention your website. People can go there, and your books are also available on Amazon. But what's your website?
My website is devonmiller.wix.com/author. And, of course, find me on social media at Author Devon Miller on Facebook and Instagram.
And you can order his books. People, it is a wonderful thing to order books and just have them sent straight to a hospital. I know that you do so much work and care so much about children's hospitals. And people, if you don't have children in your life to buy the books, well, just order them and send them to a hospital of your choice, and they will find a child there who will just love them. So, Devon Miller, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. We're going to play one of Devon Miller's book buzzes, and then we'll go to commercial after that, Ed. Anyway, thank you so much for being here today, Devon.
Of course. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Top Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Already ranking in as the number one new release on Amazon for children's African history fiction within its first month of release is the book Black Boy Fly, written by bestselling author Amanda Lynch. In Amanda's sixth published book, readers get to fly across the pages with Amanda's character, MJ. This book encourages young boys to be unapologetic about their identity, history, and giftedness. The book also features gorgeous and eye-popping illustrations done by Bonnie Lemaire. As a bonus, the book includes 100 affirmations young boys can repeat with their parents and teachers to reinforce self-esteem and confidence. Amanda wrote the book as not only being a love letter to her son Amani, but to many other black and brown boys around the world. She also wanted to be a part of the change to diversify children's book literature, which is really, really cool. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's book buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. In a few minutes, I'm going to be talking to Philip Vega. Is he on yet? No, he'll call in a few minutes. Okay, I just wanted to say to everyone, again, my webpage is radio-joyonpaper.com, and I'm trying to put up as many of the interviews as I can, as quickly as I can. It is a process, but once I do, I hope that you'll check them out. It is always so inspiring to listen to authors about the struggles that they've gone through to get to where they are today, because it's not always easy. Every one of you out there, those of you who are writing, know that this is a process that you go through. It's just wonderful to be a writer. The joy that it gives you. I was so thrilled in February when Eugenia Lovett West was on the program, and she was celebrating her 97th birthday here on Joy on Paper. And that was so exciting. And she started writing when she was in her 60s, late, maybe even early 70s. So she started writing late in her life. She had a complete full life before that, and then she retired, you know. And she said, well, I want to do something. And she started writing. And there, you know, at the age of 96, she was also on for her birthday when she was 96. And she wrote a book about cybercrime. Now, I tell you, she did so much research, and the because I've had some experience with people who are in the business of cyber technology, she was spot on. Everything she wrote about was just right. And so she did this research when she was 96 years old. This is just shows you that if you can't just give up. You can't just like retire and say, that's it. Your life can just be starting. And for her, of course, to be writing when you're not in your 90s, and she was doing up until, you know, this whole COVID mess, she was doing book signings, she was doing book events, she would go places and meet people, because when she was doing the research for the cybercrime book, she actually went out and interviewed people, you know, involved in the business. And this is just a miracle of writing. It can give you so much joy and so much, just fill your life. And so that's one of the things I want to just tell you about, that I hope that for those of you who have been writing, that you will really, you know, the ones of you who have started writing during this pandemic year, just continue, just keep going. Don't give up because, you know, you discover there are problems in, you know, getting an agent or how to get to the next level. If you've written a book, treat it like a business and get yourself a good editor and learn about everything that you need to know in order to either find an agent or to publish it independently. And indie authors can do very, very well. I mean, many indie authors have enormous careers, but it's all on how you approach it and wanting to really succeed and wanting to make that connection with the reader. And there are so many ways to do it, but again, this is all a process. And so one of the things, now, Devon Miller just mentioned that he's writing a script, which I have told all of you, I did it when I was young. I went through the process. I had lots of fun doing it. And even though none of my scripts have been in, you know, filmed yet, but I live in hope too, because the lovely thing about writing a film, if you write a film, even say you write a film in 1970 and it's set in 1970, well, they can make that film today because people are nostalgic about 1970. You don't know. You know, so it's funny how things can happen. And we always have to, I think a scriptwriter's life is living in hope. That's somebody has to write a book. Living in Hope, the scriptwriter's guide to to sanity, perhaps. That's what you have to do, because you have to just keep trying and keep hoping, and you never know when somebody will come along and say, oh, that's it, I need to finally film that thing. Anyway, so I just want to say that keep writing. Those of you a few of you have sort of sent me messages saying, oh, I don't know what I'm doing now. I wrote the book and I don't know what I'm doing. In May, I'm going to have some agents on, and I hope they will help sort of give you ideas on how to approach how to approach the next phase of your life. So that's going to happen in May. But meanwhile, I'm going to be talking right now to the man I was just speaking about, Philip Vega. Hi, Phil.
Hey, Patsy, how are you?
Okay. Well, it's so good to have you on the program today, because I've been thinking a lot about you, and I've been thinking a lot about so many of the authors whose books really, to me, should be films. Partly it's because I'm so tired of looking at all those little squares on Netflix and Amazon and all those little squares. I spend half my time looking at the little squares. And my sister and I are playing a game. I'm find a square that you like, you know.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we do something similar in our home, my wife and me. So it's like, you know, it's almost like, you know, trading baseball cards. You know, got it, don't want us to see it, no thanks, got it, see it, you know.
I wish
it comes up with these, you know, algorithms that say, oh, no, you'll like this. No, I won't.
Well, I wish they would let us put an X across the ones we don't want to see, so that we don't keep going back.
Yeah, exactly. That would be great.
Well, I wanted to tell you that a few weeks ago, I had on the program Barbara Hinsky. Now, Barbara Hinsky is just a lovely, lovely woman. She has a wonderful series called the Rosemont series. It's a cozy mystery series. Very nice, a really good one. And she wrote a few years before that, she wrote an independent novella called The Christmas Club, which was picked up by the Hallmark Channel. And that was just a novella. And they picked it up, and they turned it into a nice little Hallmark movie called Christmas at Rosemont, which you can watch on Prime Video. And so it just started me thinking about how important, now for her, of course, she had one novella picked up. They did one little movie about it. But now, of course, everything she writes, someone's interested in.
Sure.
And that's what happens. So, you know, if you can get a movie deal for a book, even a little novella, a short story, what the heck, you want to try to do that. And in her case, her story, The Christmas Club, was set back in the 50s. Of course, when they took it, they switched it to modern day. So it's, you know, modern day story. But, I mean, that's what happens in Hollywood. They take a book, they take any book, and you know, they rewrite, when they write it, they can do whatever they want to it. But really, what does she care? She got to go up to Winnipeg and watched the whole filming of the you know, movie. And so she had that thrill. And now, of course, once you have that first movie under your belt, you're open to so many other things.
Absolutely. And it's exciting. And actually, my wife and I did watch that movie, so I'm familiar with it. And it was really well made.
Well, and what happened when I read your book, the first time I read it, Last Exit to Montauk, it's so funny. It's one of the books that I started reading it, and then while I'm reading it, within a few pages, I get to a scene that just sticks with me. And still, every time I am in the rice aisle at the supermarket, I think of Philip Vega. Which is a great accomplishment for an author to, you know, come back to somebody's mind years after they've read a book. It's pretty good. So you achieve something here, and it's a great scene. So why don't you, we'll just step back here, and I want you to, I think this book should be a film. I think it would make a great film. It's, for me, as I read the book, it was a film in my head. Within a few pages, after that, I really almost forgot I was reading a book because I saw it. You wrote it so well. So let's set it up. Just what you would say to a Hollywood producer. Look, I've got this book, and I want you to know about it. What would you say?
Well, you know what? So I would sit down, and I would tell the producer, producers, people putting together a potential film project, Here's a story about an upper middle class Hispanic 18-year-old virgin. He falls in love with his super intelligent, blonde haired, blue eyed classmate, and it's a tragic interracial coming of age love story set on Long Island at the end of the summer in the mid 80s. So think Say Anything meets Booksmart.
Well, just a minute, Phil. Hold on. We're having a little bit of a sound problem. Is it your phone?
I don't know. I can hear you just fine. Can you not hear me well?
I want to make sure we have this. Try talking a little bit closer to the phone or something.
Sure. How's this? Is this a little better?
Yeah. Are you on speakerphone or what?
No, I'm on my cell phone.
You're on your cell phone. Okay. All right. So let's restart this, because the sound quality wasn't good, and I want to make sure this is good, because you never know when a Hollywood producer might be listening. So go ahead.
Absolutely. How's this? Is this better?
Perfect.
Okay, great. So I would tell a producer, someone in Hollywood, look, this is a story of an upper middle class Hispanic 18-year-old virgin who falls in love with his uber intelligent, blonde haired, blue eyed classmate in a tragic interracial coming of age love story set on Long Island at the end of the summer in the mid 1980s. And I would say, think Say Anything meets Booksmart.
Okay. Now, so it's from a producer's point of view, they're saying, okay, boy meets girl, la 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 la, blah 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 blah, and does it end happy or not? And they don't care. So they've got the basic idea. It's a boy meets girl. Of course, having an interracial relationship in those days was a little bit different than it is today, but it's still fascinating.
Absolutely.
For people. The way the book is written is very touching, and it's the kind of story that so many people will relate to. So we have the boy and girl. Tell us about from an actor's point of view, why would you want to play these two parts?
Absolutely. Well, first, the story is told from the male protagonist's point of view, right? And the male, the main male protagonist is a Hispanic male in his teens. He's 18 years old, named Emilio. There's also a voiceover adult, right? So think Diego Tinoco from Netflix's On the Block, or Isai Morales, the adult version voiceover. And the narrator for Emilio, he is a high school senior. He's the middle son of an outlier, a renowned pediatric surgeon mother who's a very strong female character. They live in a predominantly upper middle class Caucasian neighborhood on the North Shore of Long Island. And while he's an average 80s teen, he loves playing tennis, swimming in his pool, hanging out with his friends, going to the mall. He's still that. He's still a bit immature. He doesn't understand the nuances of adult relationships. He lost his father at a formidable age, which makes him insecure, avoiding conflicts, and is afraid of loss. He's smart. He's lovable. He's quirky. He's the type of guy who always is ready with a movie quote or a quick one-liner. So that's the male protagonist. The female protagonist, her name is Bea. Think, a young Blake Lively or Lily Reinhart of Riverdale fame. Like the male protagonist's mother, she's an outlier. She's a steadfast, uber-intelligent, blonde-haired, blue-eyed young woman. She knows what she wants out of life. She has the drive and internal fortitude to make it happen. Like the narrator, she's a high school senior, and she's on track of being the school valedictorian. In addition to her friendliness and, intelligence and good looks, she's also highly competitive and athletically inclined, even beating the narrator at tennis and bowling and some other things. But she's also talented. She also sings, plays guitars, loves the Rolling Stones. But for all of her unique qualities, there is an emptiness inside of me, a piece missing, one that ultimately Emilio, the narrator, fulfills, and they really complete one another. In Emilio's eyes, B is the epitome of love, right? She's both patient and kind. There's a unique tenderness about her in the way she cares for her beloved Mister, as she nicknames Emilio. And with the love of her life at her side, she's really looking forward to, all the things that life is going to throw at her. And so those are the two main protagonists. Rounding out...
Wait. Let's go back to these two. Now, I'm telling they are really wonderful parts for two young actors.
Absolutely.
They... because there are so many the scenes, there are so many wonderful scenes that the two actors, where they're together, and all of the things that you exactly, you know, write about, the tennis, the music, all of this, two young actors will love this part. But of course, it's always wonderful in a film if you have an older character. Now, I'm talking about selling a film. If you're selling a film, they'll always say, well, okay, you find two young actors, you know, just starting off in the business. They don't have names yet. But they always like to tie in one, at least one mature member of the cast who has a track record, who knows the business, actually. Because when you sure. when you're shooting a film, you don't want a whole bunch of new people. I mean, it's really, shooting a film is difficult. You want everybody to be experienced, except perhaps your two new stars that you're building up. But everybody else better be professional. And so if you have one, just sometimes it's just a deal can hang on having one really good actor or actress. So the part of the mother here is something that I think any actress would love, a Hispanic actress would love. And there are lots of great Hispanic actresses out there.
Absolutely. So the part of Ma, right, so Emilio's mother, like I mentioned, she's an outlier, right? This is the 80s, right? She's a strong-willed Dominican widowed mother of three. She's very family-centric. She's a renowned pediatric surgeon. And in my mind's eye, you know, somebody like a Zoe Saldana or Salma Hayek would be great in these roles. She has very few contemporaries for, you know, in this era. You know, she has a love of her children, which is offset by also her love for the Bronx Bombers, the New York Yankees, which she loves watching while, you know, sitting down, knitting her blankets and, you know, keeping her fingers nimble, you know, as she continues to develop her surgical skills. One of her great strengths in this book, in this novel, is recognizing her children's strengths and weaknesses and does her best in guiding them without being that hovering parent, you know, providing those pearls of wisdom when needed and yet sometimes required, as any parent of a teenager will tell you. So this is a great role for a woman who is, you know, not the, you know...
not the ingenue.
Migrant worker, right. Migrant worker. She's not the, you know, domestic... You know, she's a pediatric surgeon. She's a well-renowned pediatric surgeon.
Funny. She's funny. She has a little bit of a potty mouth.
She does.
She's a quirky person.
She has a great wit. She's not shy about her one-liners and keeping her kids, you know, in line, you know, with her tongue. She's a strong-willed Dominican mother of three young men. So, you know, she has to, you know, keep them in line, and whether it's with a look or with a comment or sometimes even with you know, a chancleta or a sandal, as you know, non-Hispanics know it.
Well, I tell you, she is a wonderful character. And as you said, in the 1980s, there weren't that many Hispanic doctors in general. Certainly not a female pediatric doctor. So she stands out from the crowd, and she makes it interesting. As I said, she's a type of part of that an actress would just sink her teeth into.
Absolutely, and you know, and so that's Emilio's mom, and then her, you know, I don't want to say polar opposite, but rounding out the mothers would be Bee's mom, right? So, Emilio's mother, you know, 45 to 52-year-old actress. Bee's mother, you know, same age range, right? You know, 45 to 55. But, you know, her mom, think of a Robin Wright type, who could also direct the who could also direct the feature. You know, she's a stern mother of three as well, who controls her roost with an iron fist. She is an educated woman with certain, we'll say, preconceptions, especially when it comes to people of color, right? So you have that friction between her and her daughter dating a boy who's brown-skinned. You know, we even see this when he asks about Emilio's parents. You know, she thinks, oh, is she, you know, where does she work as a domestic? And is surprised to learn that she's indeed a renowned surgeon, you know, who graduated at the top of her class from University of Pennsylvania. So, you know, she doesn't hide her initial disdain for, you know, her daughter's new friend. But the good news is she eventually comes around and sees beyond his skin color and learns to accept and eventually love her daughter's boyfriend.
So you have here in this film, you have the boy meets girl, you have the conflict, just a necessary conflict you need to make a film interesting. You have all the elements that I think would be just so much fun to work with. As when I read it, I could have sat down right then and written a script without any problem, because, you know, so many times I was given a book to write a script for. And I don't know if I should mention the name. Anyway, I was given the one particular book. And I was given the book, and I was told, write a script for this book. And I'm reading this book, and it is, like, boring. I mean, like, horrible. It's, like, 376 pages. And I still remember it, 376 pages. It was agony for me. And I'm thinking, you're kidding me. I can't make a script out of this. This is too boring. But they wanted a script, and they were willing to pay for it. So I said, okay. Hey.
So there you go.
So I figured out an angle, which was actually very innovative, and if it was really very innovative, and I came out with a script, 120, well, it was 118 pages, actually, and of that, I used perhaps, in the entire script, I used perhaps 100 words from the book. 100 words of dialogue from the book, because I had to make the rest up because everything was so terribly boring. But in your case, you have scene after scene, the scene here, you know, this scene, that scene, they practically write themselves.
Well, I'll tell you, there's some great antagonists as well. I mean, there's the Kyle Ferguson role, right? That 21-year-old bad boy, you know, Dacre Montgomery from Stranger Things fame. You know, he still carries a torch for his ex-girlfriend, B. You know, he's an arrogant racist son of a wealthy hedge fund manager. You know, he plays a great role. His sister also plays a great role as well. His younger sister is B's best friend. You know, think Odeya Rush type or Olivia Holt. You know, both these kids come from a troubled, you know, home. Both are substance abusers, masking and medicating their pain with, you know, alcohol and cocaine. So, you know, these are rich characters with also, you know, biting wits and tongues.
And much of the script writes itself, you know, really writes itself, except you've been writing a script, right? How did you find that you wrote a script for this film?
I have a script written, and it's you know, there are there was a lot from the book that I had to, you know, I really had to whittle away. You know, I kept much of it intact, but there, you know, like you said, there are some things you need to go, okay, if you want to fit it into a 120 page script, right, you want to leave it at a, you know, 2 hour script. Yep. Our film.
Yeah, never more than that. And
right, you have to whittle away and just drill in on the parts that really pop off the page. That's what I did.
So this has been you've enjoyed this process.
Loved it.
But I will tell you that if Hollywood comes along, the chances of them using your script are, like, not very high, because that's part of the fun of Hollywood. I discovered this, is that it goes through many hands. A script will go through many hands. And the idea, some of the ideas will be thrown away after, you know, the somewhere along like the third or fourth script, which is usually done by a cousin or a relative of the producer. they'll try to run that for a few months, and then they'll throw it back out. But actually, quite often, you do come back to the basic first script of the author. So there's hope always. But Hollywood will turn, just like with Barbara Hinsky's book, it was set in the 1950s, and they moved it to modern day. If that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. Although I think with your book, it would stay in that era because it is particularly relevant that, you know, for the mother to be, that it was unusual to be a pediatric surgeon for a Hispanic woman at that time. And I like period pictures. And also, the nice thing about setting it in that period, you have some really great music to use.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that is definitely an underlying, you know, theme is the music, right? The music and the location are both, are definitely part of the movie.
Well, they're cinematic. They really would enhance the film because if you try to move it to today, you don't have any good music. I mean, I'm sorry. There's not any the music back then I think was better. So
all I'll say is no comment and kind of go from there.
Yeah, but I think it would be much richer if it was kept in the era that you wrote it for. And Phil, I want to thank you for being on Joy on Paper. My goal is always to help authors, you know, market their books because this is, as you know, it's not easy, right?
It's never easy. And, you know, if folks interested in reading Last Exit of Montauk or Searching for Sarah, which is my, you know, latest novel, it's my... I just won the 2021 Book Excellence Award, LGBTQ Fiction for Searching for Sarah. You know, any of my novels are available at either philipvega.com or Amazon or any of your book retailers.
Okay, and people can go there, and on the Amazon, you have a little video there.
Absolutely.
That you did. Did you created that?
Had it created, and it's a little featurette for Last Exit to Montauk. Gives you a nice feel for the book.
Okay. Well, Philip, I think that, I'm always keeping my fingers crossed for my authors because I feel like, you know, I was there right at the beginning when this book, you know, first came out, and I was thrilled with it, and I'm so glad that you're running with it, and we'll continue to promote it because I think The Last Exit from Montauk would be one of the, you know, we'd see that on a little square there on our television, and everybody will jump at it, and it actually would be a big one. It'll be featured because I really do think at some point with the right, as you're working hard to promote the book, and that's important. And perhaps we can find just the right actress to jump on and who would love this part because it's a wonderful part for a Hispanic actress. So, Philip Vega, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And, if you get a movie deal, you'll come back and tell us, right?
Oh, you're my first interview.
Okay, and then I get invited. Hopefully, we'll have red carpets by then, and I can come to the premiere.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'll serve you popcorn personally.
Okay. All right, Phil. Thank you so much. It's been a joy to talk to you again.
Pleasure to speak with you as well. I love your show.
Thanks. Bye bye now.
Thanks. Goodbye.
Okay, Philip Vega. Last time he was when we did this book, Last Exit to Montauk, he was actually here in the studio, which was so much fun. But we're getting back there, and look, I had Devon Miller in the studio today, and that was quite a thrill to see him again. And please, if you are looking for something to do for just out of the goodness of your heart to do something kind, order some of his books. It's a lovely little series, and I know I ordered and had it sent to Shriners Hospital for Children. And there's always, there are kids there who need books. So this is a wonderful thing that you can do. And it's real, real easy. You just, you know, go on Amazon and, you know, push, you know, buy and then send it. You can send it anonymously, or you can just put your name, or you can dedicate the gift in memory of somebody. But it's a wonderful thing to do, and to give a child a book. And all summer long, well, I hope the kids will actually get out and be able to get outdoors. And that reminds me that I had Mary Kay Carson on the other day, and we were talking about her series about outdoors and for kids. So this is another wonderful series that, you know, we have to encourage children to read, because if they can become readers when they're young, who knows, they'll become writers when they're older. And when they're 97 years old, they might still be writing books. So, you know, this is one of the wonderful, that's why I named this program Joy on Paper, because reading is such a joy, writing is such a joy, and being able to share. And actually, the book sales have gone up this year because of the pandemic, and sales are looking good. They are looking for product. There are agents who are open for submissions, lots of agents open for submissions. But if you're looking for an agent, you have to go to Publishers Weekly to look at who's active, because you only want to deal with an active agent, somebody who's already getting deals and can get you more deals. And again, I want to thank also a special thanks, really. You know, sometimes just some of my guests are so wonderful to me. And I want to thank Jerome Preisler. He is so great. He said, he put something really nice on his Facebook page for me. You can go check it out. It's Jerome Preisler. And he is, of course, the author of NetForce books based on Tom Clancy's characters. And so he's a great, great, wonderful, wonderful author. And he's going to be on the program at the end of May. His book is coming out, and so I'm looking forward to having Jerome Preisler back. And just check out his Facebook page, and you will really enjoy just enjoy reading his books too. And, you know, as I always say, one of the joys of life is to see your books to see your book. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. Like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her Witch City Mysteries. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So get busy. What are you waiting for? Just write. And it's just such a thrill. It's such a thrill to be able to say, I am an author. And that will happen to you if you keep writing. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. It looks like everybody's going to have wonderful weather all across the United States. My brother's not even going to have any snow. He might not be happy about that. Anyway, everybody, bye-bye now. Have a great weekend.